we must come together and unite as one family on this planet. And, you know, really, love is the way, love is the answer. And the more that we can dive deeper and deeper into that love, and the more that we can see that love reflected outward in our lives, made manifest in the world, then it's better for everyone, you know. So there's many opportunities in life to be greedy and to be selfish and to, you know, do many, many things, you know, through our own desires and projections. But ultimately, the only thing that is ever gonna be of value, that when you're on your deathbed, that you're really gonna remember, is that love that we share. And that's the commonality between all of us, that love that is inside of our hearts, which is God, which is truth, which is whatever word you wish to give to it. Shiva, Allah, Rastafari, Christ, Buddha.
Welcome to Yoga Beyond the Asana, the wonderful podcast. I am Wanda Batwal. Together, we will explore the fascinating world of yoga, spirituality, and personal development. We hear and we learn how we can integrate more love, balance, and fulfillment into our daily lives. Thank you for listening. Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Yoga Beyond the Asana, the wonderful podcast. I'm so happy that you're here. For this week's episode, I am super excited to welcome the internationally recognized singer-songwriter Sam Garrett as a guest. Most of you probably know him already, but for the ones who don't, here comes the official introduction. Sam Garrett is an English singer-songwriter whose music highlights his spiritual journey exploring Eastern philosophy, meditation, yoga, and Rastafari wisdom. Coming from England, Sam taught himself playing the guitar as a kid and started playing in rock and punk bands in his youth. But his path was meant to go into a different direction. Sam went on a journey by himself to explore and find his way of playing music and making music. After being in an ashram in England in his early 20s, he realized that he doesn't want to be a musician in a commercial way, but to seek truth, seek for his inner self, being authentic and being real. Thankfully, he didn't stop being a musician for good, but realized that music was his calling and music his way of expression. Since then, he has released 3 LPs and several EPs and gives music to this world that uplifts, enlivens, and inspires the hearts and souls of people all over the world. We all know his songs like Higher Than the Mountains, We Are One, Mama, as well as the beautiful recordings from the satsangs of Moji. I am very happy to welcome you today to this podcast. Hi, Sam Garrett.
Hey, Wanda. Thank you so much for having me.
Yay. So, an opening question I always love to ask guests on the show is, what moves you right now?
Good question. What moves me right now? You know, I have to just say life, being alive, you know, and experiencing all the diversity of this life, but not from an entangled place, but experiencing all of this life from the stillness and the very heart of life. And I can't say any one particular thing. I could say I've just come back from Jamaica, so I'm still feeling the energy, the hum, the buzz of that journey and that experience within my being. But I just have to say, you know, just to be alive, you know, is in and of itself the blessing, the gift. So just to be alive is what makes me feel alive.
Tell us a bit about your journey in Jamaica. How is the vibration there? How can we imagine it if we've never been there before?
Very powerful. Jamaica is a very beautiful place. It's a very expressive place, very open culture and people, and very loving, very warm, you know, and there's also a lot of poverty in Jamaica, you know, the system is set, you know, in a certain way that doesn't really allow for a lot of opportunities, and a lot of the wealth is not distributed, you know, in a fair way. But I have to say, even within that, you know, even within those circumstances, because you hear a lot of things, I heard a lot of things, you know, about Jamaica, be careful. And of course you have to be wise and you have to be careful in that way anywhere. But what I felt and what I found from the people and from this land is one love.
Mm.
And that's something that we've heard very often, one love. But when you really get to the heart and the meaning of that, you know, it's very powerful. And that's what I experienced in Jamaica, was that I was really treated like a brother, like a friend and a family. That was the feeling. It was just one family, one people. And that was the message again and again and again, that it didn't matter what, you know, skin color you have or where you were born. You know, ultimately, we all come from the same one. And so I'm feeling that, you know, I'm feeling the blessing of these people. And I met so many, many, many beautiful beings. And I feel like they left their mark on me somehow. Like, yeah, their blessing is fully alive inside of me.
Mm, beautiful. Thank you for sharing a bit about your journey. Right now we are here in Portugal.
Yes.
You were so kind to visit us. We're sitting right now here in our little tiny house, in our 30 square meter home. Most of the listeners know a little bit about my family, that we moved to Portugal 1 year ago. You moved to Portugal. Tell us a bit, like, what made you choose Portugal? And what do you love about living here? What brought you here? You're from England originally.
Yeah.
You've traveled the world. Like, maybe you can share a bit, like, what brought you here?
Yeah, absolutely. My spiritual teacher, Muji, who you mentioned before, he lives here. And he's actually originally from Jamaica, but moved to England when he was 16. And that's where I met him. I met him in London at his small little flat in Brixton. And I came to know about Babaji through when I went to India, and he'd given satsang in India in Rishikesh. But I never actually got to meet him then. But when I got back home to England, I started to watch many, many videos from him. And it touched my heart in such a profound way. He was having a gathering at his house, and I was invited to go. And so that's where I met him for the first time. My then partner at the time, she was pregnant with our daughter. And when she met him, she had a very profound meeting. We both did a very profound meeting with him. And she said, I want to go and live there in Portugal with him and the community there. So that's how I came initially, and I've been here for 6 years. So yeah, it's definitely home in the physical sense, and also in the spiritual sense, because, you know, Babaji is here, and I feel that what he's pointing us to is perhaps the most important thing: to find happiness, peace, and contentment within our self. And to be here and to be within this community and with others, and, you know, living very close to nature, and in this way, you know, it feels very good for my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm very happy, and now to have a new friend here as well.
Thank you.
Yes,
so happy as well. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about, as you mentioned before, your spiritual teacher Muji. I've mentioned him before a couple of times as well in this podcast, in trainings, and, you know, quoted sayings of him and his wisdom. And maybe you can share a little bit about the student guru relationship, because I think there are still a lot of misconceptions around, like, what is a guru?
Yeah.
you know, what does it mean to live in an ashram? Yes, so maybe you can share a little bit. You said like you had a really powerful meeting when you met him first. Like,
yes,
maybe, and you can share a little bit about your relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, before I met Babaji, I was already, I think from when I was very young, I always had this sense of there's something more, you know, that a life that was presented on the surface layer of things, you know, within society and culture and what is expected, and, you know, you get a nice girlfriend, you get married, you buy a house, you get a good job, all these things. I knew that I didn't really want to go down this kind of path, you know. Somehow my life, from when I was younger, I was already contemplating life and existence and God. I felt very connected to God, what that meant for me. And, you know, as I grew, like you mentioned in the intro, music was always around in my life, and I grew up playing in different like punk rock bands and things like this, you know. So music was already a very, I would say in a way, music was like my first guru, my first teacher, you know. Music was a place where I could go and I felt at home, you know. I felt comfortable, I felt content, and everything else just kind of vanished in that, you know. Like whenever I would play music, time would just dissolve and disappear, and just this, I came to see later that it's a form of meditation. But I didn't know that when I was a kid, you know. I was just kind of doing it and it felt really, you know, really alive and really fun. But then as I got older, I guess I started to disidentify from the culture that I grew up in. You know, the culture that I grew up in England. I grew up in the countryside of England, really beautiful nature and very beautiful upbringing, but somehow each one, as they come into manifestation, has to taste conditioning. You know, we each have to go through that stage of identifying with certain things and then ultimately coming to see that we're none of that, actually. So culture is a big one, and where we grow up naturally affects how we are. But I always felt so connected and in resonance with so many other cultures, Jamaica being one of them, because I went to Jamaica first when I was 16 with my family. And I was already into Bob Marley and reggae music, and Rastafari was already in my consciousness. And that was a really powerful experience going when I was 16, because it opened something in me to this expansiveness of life. You know, it was no longer just my culture and my world, but it was like I tasted something that was just completely wild and free and so alive. And, you know, the nature and the food and the culture and the music, it really lit something up inside of me. So then going on, after some time, you know, I started to read books. You know, I'd go to school and read books, and I was learning about Buddhism, and I started to get fascinated with Buddhism, Hinduism, all these different cultures from around the world. And, you know, I came to know about meditation and yoga. And somehow my consciousness was just like drawn into these things, you know. It was like I was being pulled somehow. And around that time, when I was 16, 17, my father had an awakening. So I was already being pulled in this direction. Then my dad went through a huge transformation within himself, through reading the book, The Power of Now. And basically from that point on, my life became very much focused on what I would say God, spirituality in that way. More just, something became much more intimate within myself. I started to, yeah, just what I would say is feel God much more inside myself.
So did your father share with you his awakening experience?
Yeah, absolutely. It was like a oneness, you know, like we were fully together in it. Because like I said before then, I'd already been kind of interested in practicing meditation and learning about all these different cultures and practices and ways. and reading a lot of things and watching videos about things. So then when this happened for my father, it was like, it was just more encouragement for me. It was just another recognition of, you know, this is just the way somehow that I was just going. And me and my father at that time became very close, and still to this day. But in this time, you know, there was a real meeting of what I would say of our soul connection, you know, much more than a father-son relationship. We somehow just transcended everything, and all of those different roles and different things, they became less somehow or irrelevant to the deeper truth that we were experiencing within ourselves. And that just continued, you know, like a snowball. It just kind of kept going and going and going. And then I started to come across teachers and different gurus from India, like Ramana Maharshi, Neem Karoli Baba. Yeah, all these different, you know, great masters from India. And then I went to India, actually, and that was a very powerful experience for me, a very, very deep dive, a deep journey. But that's where I came to know about Muji. Actually, I went to India with this idea of, like, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to meet my master. I'm going to go live in a cave. And because music at that point had become very, it became almost polluted somehow, because I was working with lots of different people that wanted to maybe see me go in a certain direction, in a more commercial direction. But my heart was just getting deeper and deeper into this this love and this peace that I was feeling. And so my songs, naturally, they reflect my experience. And so at that time, I couldn't really sing the songs I wanted to, because there was like this feeling of, you know, you need to kind of be like this. You need to sing about this, or you need to kind of fit into something that sells, you know, that is commercial, that's a product. And so it became very loud for me. And I said, no, I'm not going to go down this route. And so that's when I went to India. And when I got to India, my purpose for being there was really like to get away from music and to just become like a sadhu, like a monk, and just leave everything. And I said goodbye to my family and friends, and I was never going to come home. I was just going to be there, you know, and meet my master and live in a cave. But God and life had other plans for me. And I got very sick in India. And then when I left India, I got home and I found all these videos from Muji on YouTube. And it was like everything I was looking for in India, I found in him on YouTube back home in England. So it was this funny thing of like, I went to India to find, you know, my guru and live this life. And I got really sick. I left, got home, and then I actually found what I was looking for in India. And then some kind of, by grace, life brought us together, you know, because, you know, at that time, through how I came to meet him was really somehow divinely orchestrated. And actually, I was playing on the street a lot then. And somebody actually sent a video of me playing to Muji. And I received a video message from him, and he was saying, you know, I'd love to meet you. We're really loving and enjoying your music that you're sharing, and be a real joy to meet you. So for me, it was like just again, another confirmation, you know, that I'm on the right path, and, you know, life just brought us together in this way. And then, yeah, finally coming to meet him in London and then going to live in the ashram here in Portugal. And my relationship with Babaji is hard for me to really describe, you know. It's like when I came to meet Babaji, I'd never met anybody in this lifetime that was completely free. Like when I came to meet him, it was like I just knew him. You know, even before I met him physically, like when I saw him, even just a photograph of him, I knew him. my soul, my heart knew something, and I can't explain it in words. It's just a knowing inside. And then when I came to meet him physically in London, it was this feeling of, I've just known you forever, you know? And it was almost like this feeling of just like, oh yeah, nice to see you again. You know? And just this recognition of what is really here, what is really true, you know, which we never really get from our conditioning and culture and schooling and all this, but it's always here. And this is what he's pointing us to. So my relationship with him, it can be very, you know, normal in some way. We can be sat having tea and talking about the different types of trees or something. But behind that, there's this, it's just this deep presence, this deep love, and this deep knowing of who we truly are. And so to be in his presence for me is always that. It's just a reminder of what is really here, what is really true. And it's hard for me to speak of because I don't know if there's words to really describe it. But yeah, it's very profound, very powerful. And he has changed my life in ways that, like I say, I can't really explain. But my life, it just could never continue the way it was, you know, before meeting him. It just got deeper and deeper and deeper in this. Mm-hmm. And it's just continued like that. And more my music has become the expression of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, you know, through that, beings also have come to find my music. And then from finding my music, find him. Or in finding him, they find my music. And like this, you know, it goes. So, yeah, it's beautiful like that.
Mm, thank you.
Yeah.
How can people who've never been to an ashram imagine it? Like you shared before, like you were living there for some time. Like how is the life at an ashram? Like do you have certain rituals, like tasks? I guess it's also it's a very devotional life, right?
Yeah.
So you live there because of your teacher.
Yeah.
And so how can one, you know, some people could never imagine living like this, but how is it? Like, how was it for you?
Yeah, for me, I can't speak for everyone because I know that within that ashram, you know, within any ashram, everyone is going to live, you know, still within their own unique flow and expression. But from my experience, what I can say is, you know, waking up every day and going into the mandir, which is like a kind of hall where, you know, we sit and we sing and we chant and, you know, we sing our praises to the divine, to God, and also to Babaji and all the great saints and sages that have come, that have shined their light in this world and that we now benefit from. You know, we just sing glory to them and also to our own heart, because it's one and the same. I wake up and chant and sing and maybe have some breakfast, and it depends then what your task is, you know, because everybody might have a different thing. For me, I used to work in the kitchen, so my thing was like chopping vegetables and cooking, you know.
Are you a good cook?
Yeah, I think so. I have to cook for you so you
yes,
can tell
please.
Me. But I love cooking. Also, I always loved cooking because it was, again, like a meditation, a space where I could just, you know, fully just be and quiet. And so yeah, that was my thing. And then of course for me there was a lot of music because that's what I do, and there's a lot of musicians in Sahaja, so usually we'd get together and, you know, and sing a little bit. And there would be bhajans every week, so we would all, you know, rehearse and then we come together and all sing together. And then it's very spontaneous, and Babaji is, you know, just kind of walking around and working on the land and doing different things that he's doing. But within that climate, there's always satsang happening.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody may come with a question or a doubt or something. And so then there's satsang happening all the time. And you're just kind of immersed in this energy field of love, you know, actually. Mm-hmm. And you're all there for, you know, the most beautiful thing that I can share about Sahaja is that before I went there, I didn't know anyone. And there was probably at that time maybe like 150 people around living in the ashram. And when I got to Sahaja, everybody was my family instantly. Like, it wasn't like I need to get to know you. It was just like instant soul family, you know, instant connection. And, you know, for me, I share that with everybody now, wherever I go in the world and whoever I meet, I feel the same actually towards them. That we're all just part of this one Sangha, this one family. And, but yeah, life in the ashram is just very, very beautiful, very sweet, very simple, very humble, simple life, you know, but very rich, very powerful in, like you said, in the devotion and in the love that is shared there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of my favorite mantras are actually from the Moji band, from Omkara Shivali.
Yeah.
We are big fans. Yeah. So I really wanted to, because this is part of actually why we sit right here right now, is a little story I would like to share with you is when I was pregnant with Bodhi, I had a big screening like in some of the weeks, and they found a spot of like something white in his heart, and I was massively worried, you know, that he has some sickness or that, you know, he get disabled or something. So that was like a big shock, and especially on that day I had to sing, because I also sing mantra, I love mantra, and I had to sing with a, you know, it was like a different musicians on a video call, like singing, sharing mantra. And one of the musicians shared Lakshmi, I choose to live in love, from you and Molly. And yeah, I didn't know that song before, but in that moment, it really like hit my heart. It was like so much on the point, because I was, you know, I had to pull myself together to sit there and share mantra myself, because I was so, you know, before in tears, like was really worried about my baby. And then this mantra was shared about Lakshmi and to choose to live in love and, you know, not choose fear and choose love over fear again and again. And then I was like, wow, I never heard that song before. And I researched, you know, that song. And by then it was not on Spotify. It was just in that, you know, video version on YouTube. And from that moment, and then I asked my partner, can you please write down the chords? Because I cannot hear them, but he can hear it. Like he can hear the chords. And he wrote me down the song. And from that day on, I played that song every day on my harmonium. And I sang it for Bodhi like every day.
Yeah.
And it became like my mantra for the whole pregnancy, actually. And he was, he had to listen to it every day. So thank you for that song.
Yes.
It's my favorite song from you. And it's, and actually also the you know, I don't know if you know Temple of Fire from Shivali, that if he, it's also one of my favorites, and Bodhi listens to it, his favorite sleeping music. And so it's like really, you know, interesting how we've been already connected through the music before we even met, you know.
Yes.
And before I even put you on my list to like wanting to invite you in my podcast, you know. So it's really funny that, you know, this relationship you were speaking before, like to your guru, you know, was like starting before you even met him, you know, like energetically, as we're all connected, you know. I was already like in that moment when I really fell in love with that song of yours, you know, already like sending out, you know, in your direction. Now you're here.
It's so, like that.
So thank you for being here.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Yes. And so you're really, that's how I perceive you, really devotional, a person, really, you know, really strong in your spiritual practice. And can you tell us a little bit about, I mean, you mentioned before, making music is your spiritual practice, but do you have like any like daily practice of yoga, meditation, like you do daily something? Yeah. Or is it just like you sit down in the morning and just start playing and this is your practice, or do you have something else?
Yeah, I don't have any one specific thing that I do every day in that way. I do different things on different days depending on how I feel, or just, you know, what the moment is calling for. But yeah, I love practicing yoga and I also love surfing and skateboarding and music, of course. Sometimes playing football with some friends. And yeah, so many different ways. Also drumming, you know, like I really love drumming and connecting to that heartbeat, to that rhythm. But I would really say that, you know, and what, you know, Babaji is pointing us back to is that place before practice even, you know, and there's nothing wrong with any practice. Actually, practices, they help to refine the consciousness somehow. They help us to, you know, just become more quiet, to become more calm, and to really listen deeper to ourselves. But, you know, ultimately, what we are is here before all practice, you know. So I never like to really say to people that you need to do this or you need to do that, but really just to follow your heart, like whatever you resonate with, whatever feels alive for you. And I think sometimes we can have an idea in our minds of what is spiritual and what is not, but ultimately it's whatever is connecting you to the Most High, whatever connects you to that spirit of truth and love within your own self. I would just encourage everyone to follow that, you know, whatever lifts you up, whatever lights you up, you know, follow that, but ultimately come back to that place, you know, before all experiences, before all practices, before anything, that is already here, because there's a peace and a stillness and a freedom that is here and is inherent within every one of us. And yeah, I love to see beings just coming alive in that, to come alive in themselves, and you know, in whatever way that may be, you know. But I don't feel like it's there's necessarily any one way, you know, for everyone. Each one must find what really resonates with their heart and to really follow that.
Mm-hmm. How do you write music? Like, do you just like are hit by a spark of inspiration suddenly, or you wake up in the middle of the night? Like, you know, I think people have ideas of like creative people, musicians, poets. Like, how is it for you? Like, because I think also everyone is different, right?
And yeah.
Some people thrive in, you know, when they are in solitude, some people thrive when they are more with other people. Like, how is it for you? Like, must something happen before, or something like you go through, or like?
Yeah. music for me is life. So there's no, I don't have this like one thing that I need in order to write a song. Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, if I draw the curtains and I light three candles, and, you know, I stand on one leg for 10 minutes and you know, it's not like that. It's very random, very spontaneous. And even yesterday, I was in my next door neighbor's house, and they were all like, you know, dancing and doing yoga, doing different things. And I was just playing I had this feeling, I just want to play. Like today, all I want to do is just play. Some days I don't play at all, but some days I just play from morning to night. Like I just want to play and sing. And yesterday was like that. I just came and, you know, I hadn't played really for a couple of days or something, and then it just came really strongly. And maybe two songs came just yesterday, just ideas for songs, melodies. And usually that's how it comes, that I would just sit with the guitar when I feel it's the moment, and I just pick the guitar and I just start playing whatever comes. It's not like, I never have this feeling like it's me doing it personally, but it's something of my universal self, my higher self, my true self is just coming through somehow. It's just expressing. It's coming from that place within. So it's not like I really have to think about it or really try. There's no effort involved. It's the most natural thing. It's like having a cup of tea or just breathing, you know. It's like, just comes very, very naturally. But yeah, there's not one specific way that I write. Usually I just pick up the guitar when I feel to and start playing, and a melody will come and I just sing. I don't know what I'm singing. I just start singing. And usually I get my phone, I just hit record and I leave my phone on the side. And then at some point I will listen back Mm-hmm. When I listen back, then I get another wave of inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the words that I sang before, maybe they sound like the right words, but it's not actually the words. And then other words come. You know, it can be like that, but it comes so spontaneous in each mm-hmm. moment. It's different. You know, it's never one way. It just can come in many, many different ways. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah, you said before, it's really effortless and it feels like breathing. And yeah. would you say this is like maybe a sign for what, you know, the yogis also call your dharma, that it yeah. feels really effortless? Like, because I feel many people outside, you know, around in the world are still, yeah, looking or trying to remember why they came here, right? And what would you say, like, are ways to remember, like, what is your dharma? I think many people have this question.
Yeah, I believe that each one of us has a dharma in the world. My dharma is definitely music. Like I said, when I went to India, I had this idea of like, that's it, I'm done with music. Like my life before was all about music, and now it's like I'm not interested in that. I just want to seek oneness with God. That's all I want. But what I found was everywhere that I then traveled in India, somebody would just hand me a guitar and say, play us a song. And I was like, oh, you know, kind of all this resistance and like, oh, I don't want to do it, you know, like, and then as soon as I started playing the guitar, it was like the best feeling ever. It was just like my whole being lit up. And then I would open my eyes and everybody would just be staring at me, you know, play another song, you know, this, they didn't want me to stop playing. And I found that I didn't want to stop playing. And what I realized was that my dharma is not to run away from the world. My dharma is not to go and live somewhere in a cave away from civilization. But my dharma is to be in the world, to be of service in the world through my music. That my music is the way, is the vehicle to connect what is in my heart and spirit to the world, is to convey this message of love. And so that was what came in India. That's my dharma in the world. But I feel like each one of us has a higher dharma than that, because whatever we do in the world is still in time, and it will change and ultimately will come to an end. This life and this body will come to an end. So for me, it's not my sole purpose. My sole purpose is really to know myself and be one with who I am. And from that place, my music comes. So there's a oneness in that also. But I believe we each have that. I feel that each one of our sole purpose is really to find out who we are in this life. And then on top of that, we may have a work in the world that we do. But for me, that's secondary. For me, to know who we are is the most important, because from that place, whatever we do in the world will be of a different quality. You'll no longer be almost like a heavier presence moving around in the world, but more you carry the presence of God with you. And so you could be in a cinema selling tickets. You know, that could be your dharma in the world. That could be your role. But really, if you're coming from a rootedness inside yourself, your dharma is much deeper than just selling tickets, you know. And if people are really receptive and open, they will also be blessed by your presence. So I believe that's our deeper purpose in the world.
Mm-hmm. So what would you tell people who are still, yeah, have this question? What am I here for? How can I contribute? How can I be of service in the world? What would you tell them?
Just to, you know, it sounds cliche, but to really follow your heart. You know, I believe that throughout my life, I've always been guided, that life has been guiding me, that I've always been getting messages and signposts and, you know, been directed in certain ways, you know, to meet certain people and to have certain experiences. And the more, there's a saying, the more quiet you become, the more you're able to hear And that would be my message, is really to really listen, to tune in to what your place is. But I can't tell you, nobody can tell anybody what their purpose is. Each one must find out for themselves. And I know I meet some people that say, you know, I'm very confused about what to do. And I still feel that the remedy is to really come back to yourself, you know, to recognize and realize who you are beyond the conditioning and beyond the identity of just being a person, being a someone, just a little old me. Once we start to go beyond that, and we dive deeper into our true reality, everything is just auto-correcting outwardly. So you don't need to try to understand what you should do. Life will just naturally, spontaneously align somehow. And at least that's my experience. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you. You also have a daughter.
Mm.
Is there something you try to, or in your way of being with her, supporting her relationship with the divine? Is there something you do together, or do you do music together, or like, is there something that is important for you as a father to support her upbringing and to stay connected with the divine?
Yeah, I think just including her, you know, in what I'm doing and not forcing it on her, because I noticed that before, you know, I had these kind of ideas that, you know, I'm going to teach her so much, and I'm going to be like her guru, you know, and I'm going to like teach her all these things. But in reality, she's teaching me all the time. We're teaching each other. And so that's really the relationship and the bond that we have, is like just to be there as loving presence and support for one another. And I really feel like just including the children in what we're doing. So like the other night was Shivaratri, and we went to a gathering, and we all sat around the fire singing songs for Shiva. And she was there, and it was the most beautiful connection that we shared that evening, because the fire is going and we're singing these songs and we're really feeling the presence of Lord Shiva. And in one moment, somebody passed me the drum, and I was playing a drum, and I passed it to her. I just said, you know, could you hold it for me while I play the guitar? And we started singing this one song, and it's kind of getting, you know, to this point where it's like building, and my daughter just starts playing the drum, but like in a way that I've never heard before.
Wow.
Like she's played drum like little bits, and you know, kind of like, but this time it was like fully in time, and like even little technical things that I would do on the drum, she started to do them. Not by me showing her, not by me saying like, yo, try this, you know, do this. But just from, I don't know where it came, it just started to happen, you know. So I feel somehow it's like nurturing the natural talents and abilities that we have within us, is allowing that to come out, but not in any sort of pressured way, you know, which is how I was also brought up by my parents, was just encouragement and support, but not like, you've got to, you know, like try harder, like got it. It just naturally is coming somehow. And so I just feel like, yeah, there's not any, again, one specific thing that we do together, but it's, you know, each day is just so beautiful in its own way that it unfolds. And it could be painting together or drawing together or going to the beach together, but it's just a beauty in being together, you know, and the energy and the spirit that the children bring is so refreshing and so sometimes also just really honest and just really true and just like straight up, you know. And I love that about the kids. They're just like really real, and there's no time for any like rubbish. It's like, no, I want that, I want to do it. And it's just like, cool, it's refreshing for me to be around that, you know. So yeah.
How did becoming a father change you?
Yeah, a lot. It changed. It brought a lot more maturity, I feel, is a good word. I feel that before my daughter was born, I was kind of just drifting around and, you know, floating. And I didn't really have, like, I had my music, but I wasn't really, somehow there wasn't like a lot of focus in it. There wasn't like, it was just kind of what I did and just kind of, yeah, like I said, floating around a little bit. But then when she came, it was like, well, okay, I've got to like step up a little bit now, you know, and it's not just about me, which I think is a really powerful thing when you have another being to care for and look after and provide for, you know. But it helped me to grow a lot, but I never changed in my spirit, you know. Something has always been consistent there. But yeah, it helped me to grow up and also to even get more into my childish nature that is within me, you know. I always had this childlike feeling inside. And I think when Maya came, it was like, yeah, just be more in that. Like, life is a play, life is a dance, you know. Like, and not to get too serious about anything, but just to live and to play and to laugh and to cry and all of it, you know. Just, and to have, you know, to have a best friend, you know, to have somebody that, you know, it's like, I'm always with you. Even if I'm not physically with you, like, we are always connected. And yeah, that love, I can't really, you know, you can't really describe that love. It's not like anything else. It's like so, so powerful, so special, and so unique. Nobody will know what it is like for you as a mother to be connected, what that connection is like for you with Bodhi. It's so special, so unique. And even the moments, nobody will see those moments, but they're so special, so, yeah, so beautiful. And I cherish that, you know, and it's just a joy to see her growing and growing up with other kids in the community, and just to see her life flourishing and to see her expressing and to see her singing and dancing and just encouraging her to be herself, you know, not trying to influence her or put my thing onto her and say, you know, now you've got to, you know, just be into this kind of thing or that, but just whatever she loves and whatever she's into. And I know that that will change all the time, as it does with all of us. But just, I think, as long as we can be there to support and to, you know, to let them know that, you know, we're with you all the way.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I was just tearing up here over here.
Yeah, yeah, because I know, you know. It's like a club.
Yeah.
You know,
it's true. It's true. No words can describe. No matter how many people tell you before.
Yeah.
This experience.
Yeah. I have this thing that my mom, because, you know, I was, I guess, quite a rebellious child and always wanting to, like, you know, stay out late and do all these things when I was a kid. And my mom would always worry about me, you know, was always worrying about me. I used to say, "Mom, like, you don't need to worry about me. Like, I'm fine, you know." And she always used to say, "You'll understand one day. One day you'll have children, you'll understand." And I don't think I worry as much as my mom, but, you know, I remember the moment when my daughter was born, and I remember just that feeling of, I remember crying, and I remembered my mom in that moment saying those words to me. And I just had this feeling in my heart of like, I get it. I understand now. I know what you mean. But you can't understand, nobody can explain that bond, you know. It's something very sacred and something to be cherished, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Are there certain values or things that are important for you to teach your daughter?
Yes, absolutely. I feel that those values are already there, actually, within her, but sometimes we can get corrupted by the world. And I just noticed that, you know, sometimes she can watch something, or, you know, something happens at the school or something. There's a lot of influences, you know, and that's something that I'm very aware of more and more now, is like the influence from all these different shows and things that we're because we consume all the time, but people don't realize that we're actually consuming what we're watching, what we're hearing. So it's not just food and these things, but also there's something that I'm becoming aware of. But I feel like those values are inherent within us. It's not something that we need to instill so much as to something that we just need to remind each other of, because I feel like that's already there. And I see her the way that she shares with other kids. I see the love that she has, the respect that she has for others. And I see how upset she gets when she feels she's upset somebody else or offended them or done something wrong. I see the pain that she feels, you know, and I feel it. I feel her in that, you know, when she feels like, well, you know, but I shouldn't have done that. And then it's my duty to remind her it's okay. You know, we all make mistakes and there's nothing really wrong, actually. It's just a learning that we go, you know, the more that we're finding ourselves, the more that we're seeing ourselves in everyone else. And so therefore, whatever we're doing to others, we're doing to ourselves. And so just living naturally in that harmony and that love and that care and consideration is something that I've just naturally seen within her, you know. And from time to time, maybe there's a reminding of certain things, like, hey, you know, like just to notice certain things. But yeah, ultimately, I feel it's there within us already. And we're just kind of reminding each other as we go.
Mm. So you believe that humans are inherently good?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say inherently God. Inherently God. Mm-hmm. That it's neither good nor bad, but that the space of God that is within us, that is our true self, it is beyond good and bad, right and wrong. It's not a place of duality. It's perfect. It's perfect. Each one of us is perfect. And believing that we are imperfect, trying to become perfect, but we're already that. We're already what we're looking for. But somehow life is the journey to get to the place where we already are at, you know? And then when you're there, then you just enjoy the ride. You just enjoy the play and, you know, try to do your bit to help wherever you can and to plant seeds of change and of love and, you know, to see more peace, to see more harmony. Because the way that the world, you know, operates, you know, there is a lot of what you could call dark forces in the world. But I don't really tend to dwell on that, and I don't tend to spend too much time in that. But more, yeah, like you say, focusing on the good or on the God that is inherent again within all of us, that somehow has been seemingly lost, but must just be rediscovered within each of us.
Speaking of planting seeds of love and harmony, you have a new album coming out soon. Yes. And you're releasing some bits and pieces, some singles here and there, and your new singles about to come out. It's called Why They Make Us Cry.
Yeah.
And can you tell us what inspired you to write the song and tell us a little bit about that song? And I hope we will hear it today also.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think this song came because, again, like I said, just some of the things that I was seeing in the world and the influence and the way in which these forces can influence us and steer us in the wrong direction and take us away from that inherent love and peace and harmony, and maybe steer us, you know, towards more selfishness, greed, separation, war, hatred, you know, all these things. And the song is really, it was inspired, it came during the pandemic. I was in England, in Cornwall on the south coast. And, you know, I was just feeling all this division, and I was feeling pulled by all these different sides, you know, like about all these different opinions about COVID and, you know, every kind of opinion about it. But what I felt inside my heart is like, you know, we just must come back to love, you know. And why is there so much division? Why is there so much segregation and separation and, you know, pro-vax or anti-vax and all these things? I just saw them as like a way to keep people divided, like divide and rule, you know, divide and conquer. And I feel like this is not like a new story. This is like the oldest story as far as you go back, you know, to the time of Christ and the Buddha and even before, you know. It's like there's always been the same story, you know, same with colonialism and slavery and racism, sexism. You know, the more that you go into it, it's the same thing, which is, it's just ego, is the identification with our mind. And that's why for me, Babaji is so powerful and all these great teachers are so powerful, because they're showing us, they're giving us the key. They're giving us the key to the door to our own freedom and liberation and happiness. But yet so few of us are able to receive it and to take it. And so the song, yeah, it was kind of sparked by everything that I was seeing happening in the world and the injustices of the world. But it really has a positive message, because it's saying, don't give up, you know, don't give up on hope, don't give up on love, and to keep coming back, you know, even we may get pulled into the drama of life and, you know, get caught in our own opinions and beliefs and all this stuff. But the song is really a call to come back to love, you know, and from that place, we can really find true change in the world, you know, because there's that saying by Gandhi, be the change that you wish to see. So each one of us must come to find that place of love within our hearts and let that be expressed in the world. And that's really what the song is about.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to play it for us?
Yeah, I would love to play it for you.
Yes, please.
Let's do it. When will we wake up to their lies and their deceit, yeah?
Feeling, oh, why do we give when all the take. Well, whose media we believe in? Ooh, but don't you go give up. No, no, your life, it has a meaning. Yeah, yeah, don't let your heart be stopped. No, no, it must continue beating.
Thank you so much for this beautiful song, sharing it with the world and saying what you have to say through your music. And thank you for not going to the ashram and just escaping this world.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's really important for me that I use this voice for this reason, you know, that it's not just about my own gain somehow, but to really be of service in these times, you know. And more and more, I just pray that we come together, you know, in love and peace and as one family, irrespective and regardless of our race or religion or education or our background or our status in society, that we can come to see one another as our brother and our sister. And really, that's the message more and more.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you so much. And I think also what you shared before is really a powerful message that, you know, we are needed in this world and our services, our dharma is needed in this world. And probably not so much more escaping into the cave. And it's really important that we show up in this world and use our voices. And
yes. And it's both, you know, like I see the value and the importance. Like for me, you know, living so close to Muji, like I get to go to the ashram a lot and spend time with him and spend time with the Sangha there. And, you know, more and more I'm seeing that the Sahaja or the ashram is really inside of us. But it's not no more a physical place. It's not, you have to go to India and live in a cave for 25 years and, you know, chant so many rounds of japa and do all these things. But to realize and recognize that it's inside of us. And then to really, once you see that, you know, once you recognize and start to discover who you are beyond the conditioning, you know, you can't help but see everything else as that, as the emanation from that one source. And it's from where we all came and to where we all must return. And so this is very important, you know, that each one can use their existence, their life, in service to help others, to bring love to others, to bring light to others. And, you know, in that we start to see the world changes also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much. And the song you just shared is coming out in the beginning of March, right?
Yes, it will be out on the 7th of March.
Okay, exciting.
Yeah. Yes, very exciting. And I also have a show in Berlin on the same day at a venue which I cannot pronounce the name of. I do know the venue, but I can't remember the name right now. But yeah, I'll be playing on the 7th.
Yeah, we will put everything in the show notes where people can see you live. So do you do a little tour, or is it just like...
Yeah, this year I'll be touring around a little bit and definitely playing more in Europe. Yeah, also in Mexico, many places I'll be traveling to, but we can send you all that information so that the listeners can see.
Yes, we will put it in the show notes for sure, where people can meet you in person and listen to you. And
yes.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, I think we're nearly at the end. I have like one last question. And probably you already answered it in the podcast, but maybe you want to say something else. So last question I like to ask people is, imagine you could have the opportunity to hold a speech in front of humanity, like the whole world. And you could say what you would like to tell people on the people should know. You would like to speak to their hearts. And what would you say?
Oh, I feel I've said everything that I would like to say, but if I could say in summarizing it, you know, and of course, Bob Marley coined the phrase one love, but it's really that, you know, is that we must come together and unite as one family on this planet. And, you know, really, love is the way, love is the answer. And the more that we can dive deeper and deeper into that love, and the more that we can see that love reflected outward in our lives, made manifest in the world, then it's better for everyone, you know. So my prayer and something that I've been saying often, and something that comes from Rastafari culture as well, when they drum the Nyabingi, they chant the drumming, and the drumming is boom 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 boom. It's the heartbeat, boom boom. And every time they play that on the drum, and when I play that on the drum, internally you're chanting do good, do good, do good. And so this is really the message, is, you know, there's many opportunities in life to be greedy and to be selfish and to, you know, do many, many things, you know, through our own desires and projections. But ultimately, the only thing that is ever gonna be of value, that when you're on your deathbed, that you're really gonna remember, is that love that we share. And that's the commonality between all of us. That love that is inside of our hearts, which is God, which is truth, which is whatever word you wish to give to it. Shiva, Allah, Rastafari, Christ, Buddha, any name you wish to give, but it is coming back to that love and that oneness, and more moving away from dogma, moving away from this way is the only way, and coming to recognize that there are multiplicity and a diversity of ways to exist and coexist on this planet. And now is the time to come together as one.
Thank you so much for these, very important words, I feel, and touching words. And thank you for your time, Sim.
Thank you. It's been a real joy. I feel so blessed and honored to be here and to be in your home and to be welcomed by you. And, you know, it's a real blessing for me. So I want to thank you also. Mm-hmm. And just sending big love and blessing to all the listeners. And yeah, big hug to everyone.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was a real blessing and so much joy for me as well. Thank you also for playing for us today live here on the podcast.
Give thanks.
Yeah. And I hope to see you soon and join a concert of you myself. And,
yes.
Bring my little family. And
definitely. Yeah. I'll be playing in Portugal this year, so you must come.
Yeah, we will. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you for your time and your presence. And please share this episode if you felt touched by it, if you felt there's value in it, or you want to send it to someone who might, you know, need it right now. Please share it on social media. You can follow Sam and his journey and his music, and we will put all the important information in the show notes where you can see him playing live and his new album, his new single coming out soon. So yeah, stay in touch and thank you for listening. Namaste. Thank you for tuning in and listening. If you like this episode, I would be super happy if you share this podcast with your friends and leave me a positive review on Apple iTunes. Because only with your support, this podcast can grow and inspire as many people as possible. Thank you for joining, and we hear us next week.